This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. I'm Nick Whalen, joined by my good pal Brandon Kravitz, stepping in once again for Jeff Erickson. And boy, do we have a fun show coming your way over the next 60 minutes. Plenty to recap from a busy trade deadline in Major League Baseball. We'll talk about some of the biggest transactions we saw yesterday. Got a couple big contract announcements in the NFL. Bijan Robinson, now the highest paid running back in NFL history. Zay Flowers, making a lot of money now for the Baltimore Ravens. We'll talk about both of those to lead off the show. And look, when you got Nick Whalen and Brandon Kravitz together, two NBA guys at heart, we are getting into some early NBA win totals. We'll play a game of what's more likely to cash, pitting a couple win totals against each other. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is officially out. You can get your copy over at VSiN.com/subscribe. We're going to have Ben Stevens, Big Ten Ben, joining the show at 1:30 Eastern to talk about some of his plays from the guide. Take a look at national championship odds, some Heisman plays as well. Then we're going to dig deep into a full card of Heisman options from our guy, Brandon Kravitz. First and foremost, though, make sure you are subscribed. Make sure you're downloading the Prop Points podcast. You can find it on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search Prop Points or search VSiN. You will find us there. Brandon, a lot to get to start the show. Let's start with the MLB trade deadline. Some of the big deals that came through under the gun yesterday afternoon. We were on air around 1 p.m. Eastern, and we started to hear some whispers that Adley Rutschman would likely be on the move. It would likely be to the Boston Red Sox. That deal did not officially close until later in the day, but we now have a three-time All-Star catcher heading to the division rival Red Sox. Red Sox did send out Carlos Narvaez. They sent out three prospects to the Baltimore Orioles. All three were considered to be top six prospects in that Red Sox system. Two of those three, by the way, inside RotoWire's James Anderson's top 100 prospects. So the Red Sox did pay a fairly hefty price, Brandon, but for a team that has been on an incredible run over the last month and a half, kind of framing differently the rest of this season and looking like they are now going for it in the American League.
Very much so, as they should, especially with the way that they've been playing, with the pitching staff that they have, that I think is good enough to carry them to an AL pennant. I'll save my best bet for you until the end of the hour. But Adley Rutschman, for me, by the way, for those that don't know, I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. I am a lifelong Orioles fan. I am, from a fan perspective, heartbroken on this. As somebody who took a Red Sox ticket at 8-1 the day before the trade deadline hit and Adley Rutschman was traded over there, I'm very much pleased with the value on that ticket. So a little bit of mixed feelings for me, but defensively, he's still one of the league's elite. He hasn't been quite the hitter that we're used to seeing from Rutschman, and Orioles fans would probably tell you, especially the salty ones, that he hasn't quite lived up to his monstrous hype as the number one overall pick in 2019. But this is still a big blow for a franchise that, they probably don't pull the trigger on this if Sammy Basayo isn't sitting right behind him, but this is huge for the Red Sox. When he returns from his wrist injury, he's going to be their set it and forget it catcher that they hope to ride right into the postseason. 23-4 since July 1st. A lot of reasons to feel optimistic about Boston.
Well, it feels like kind of an admission to me by the Orioles as well, that this young core that we were so excited about as recently as last season, just maybe didn't pan out in the way that the O's thought it would. And then Rutschman, you know, he's been fine, but I don't think he's taken that next leap to the point where you're talking about him as one of the 10 to 15 best players in Major League Baseball. I think that was kind of the expectation when he came up, and, you know, they were so deep in terms of young players over the last couple of years, and just kind of feels like that core has stalled out for the O. So interesting to me that they were willing to deal an all-star like Rutschman to a division rival in Boston, but bringing much needed help to what was one of the weaker positions in that lineup for the Red Sox. We saw the Tampa Bay Rays, also in the AL East, bring in a catcher. They get Liam Hicks from the Miami Marlins. He's hitting 282, 14 homers, 62 RBI on the year. He should be the everyday catcher now down in Tampa. The Padres made a couple additions on the pitching side of things. They get Robbie Ray from San Francisco. They get Casey Mize from Detroit. So Padres beefing up their staff a bit, still two games out of the final wild card spot in the National League. What I do want to talk about, though, Brandon, is the Milwaukee Brewers, who stood pat, all due respect to Bo Naylor, who they traded for over the weekend, finally made a couple of adds. Another team that traded in division, getting Dustin May and Jojo Romero from the St. Louis Cardinals. Not quite Tarik Skubal, but is this enough? Does this move the needle for you whatsoever if you're the Milwaukee Brewers?
It's not a needle mover. I do think Dustin May is perhaps underrated because of the fall off that he had a couple of years ago, but his underlying numbers have been terrific. He's at increased velocity this year, so it's a good move. I just think that we're all disappointed because it's not so much about what Milwaukee did or didn't do. It's what the Dodgers did. And this is a Brewers team that got swept out by LA last year. And what makes you think, in looking at the way the Dodgers are comprised right now, that it's going to be any different? I think a lot of us were also looking forward to the prospects. I know you were, of Tarik Skubal and Jacob Mizorowski going in with some version of a 1-2 punch in the postseason. I don't think the rotation needed a ton of help. I mean, they do have one of the better staffs in all of baseball. And this is a team that organizationally, in order for them to sustain excellence, they have to build organically. Players are not flocking to Milwaukee as free agents. This is not one of the biggest spenders in Major League Baseball either. So they knew they weren't going to have a chance to keep Skubal. I understand them not doing it, but that doesn't make Dustin May a needle mover, not because of May, but just because the Dodgers are so good. I don't know how Milwaukee gets past them.
I think if Skubal had gone to the Yankees, the Rays, and this is what Milwaukee did, bringing in Dustin May, bringing in Romero, you would say, okay, all right, we feel okay about this. And part of the reason for that is I think there should be inherent faith now that if any team could get the most out of, you know, an up and down pitcher like Dustin May, it would be the Milwaukee Brewers, right? I think we've seen this reclamation story over and over for them, including with Kyle Harrison, by the way, who's set to return for the Brewers tomorrow. So I think ultimately standing pat like they did and, you know, making moves around the margins, I was okay with that, but I think you laid it out well. It was the blow of Tarik Skubal ending up with the Dodgers specifically, I think, makes this feel so much worse for the Milwaukee Brewers. But I would also say, Brandon, that maybe the bigger issue right now for Milwaukee, and we saw it again last night, is all three of Christian Yelich, Contreras, and Churio slumping over the last month. Christian Yelich is hitting like 175 over his last 30 games. He's fallen below Jory Ortiz in batting average for the season. So Milwaukee has other issues offensively, I think, that they need to figure out right now. We'll talk some NFL contracts in just a moment. But folks, do you want to bet smarter? Then you need RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where the sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff gives you rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy leagues, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Head to rotowire.com right now. Use our promo code VSIN. That'll get you 15% off anything we offer at RotoWire. That's rotowire.com. Promo code VSIN. So we mentioned it at the top of the show, Brandon. Bijan Robinson, now the highest paid running back in NFL history. 3-year extension worth up to $75 million. And this caps off what has been a spending spree for the Atlanta Falcons this offseason. Bijan, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Matthew Bergeron, one of their offensive linemen, all getting paid. This kind of resets the market for Jahmyr Gibbs, who's likely next up in Detroit. What do you make of the sum of the parts, I guess we will say, in Atlanta, Brandon? I get the sense that you're a little bit more optimistic about the Falcons this year than I am.
I am. And every time I tell someone I'm high on Atlanta this year, they look at me like I have four heads. So I'm going to make my case to you. You tell me if I'm absolutely insane. They have a top 10 offensive line in football. That's a good place to start. They have the best skill position players within their division. They were number 2 in the NFL in sacks last season. And while that can be a fluky statistic, their best edge rushers are really young, so they should conceivably get even better. They have one of the best defensive backs in the league in AJ Terrell. That's a premium position that they have figured out. They have a 2-time coach of the year that has taken over the head coach position, so theoretically they get a bump from Raheem Morris to Kevin Stefanski. I get that there are questions about the quarterback position, which I'm sure is how you will rebuttal this, but as long as one of the lefties is out there, I think that this team is good enough where they can kind of get out of the way and just let the rest of the roster do their thing.
Believing in the Falcons is going to require belief in Tua, Brandon. I know you're a Dolphins guy. You've watched Tua. I've been out since day one. Now, look, he's playing in a dome. Maybe that helps down in Atlanta. But I just don't like the options here. I still have belief in Michael Penix. I don't love how the recovery seems to be going. He's going to have to potentially now pry that job away from Tua, which I think is very doable. So I don't think Tua is going to play well, but I think it's a very top heavy roster. Like we like Drake London. We like Kyle Pitts. Obviously we love Bijan Robinson. Any of those guys go down, you have major, major depth issues, specifically the pass catchers, you know. And I'm excited to see what Zachariah Branch can be in the NFL, but he's probably a bit player at best, especially early on. And Drake London is somebody who's been banged up. And I just worry about the house of cards kind of falling apart for the Atlanta Falcons. But I will say, Brandon, in your defense, this is the most gettable division in football. The bar is not all that high to win the NFC South. 9 wins, very may well get it done. And I'm not high on the Panthers. I'm a little bit higher on the New Orleans Saints, but that's not a perfect roster by any means. So I could squint and see the argument for Atlanta. I don't think they should be as long in the odds as they are, because I think all these teams in the South are so similar, but don't mistake that as a ringing endorsement of the Tua Tagovailoa-led Atlanta Falcons to begin the 2026 season. We'll talk a little bit more football later in the show when we have our guy Ben Stevens stopping by, but we're going to play a game of what's more likely to cash, NBA win totals edition, when we come back. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you. We're with rotowire.com. We, of course, welcome in those listening along on Sirius XM channel 158, and to those streaming with us on YouTube TV. It's now time for one of our favorite segments that we do on Prop Points. It's called What's More Likely to Cash.
We're hunting for tickets with a real shot. Welcome to What's More Likely to Cash.
A little game of what's more likely to cash here on Prop Points. And look, like we said at the top of the show, I love betting NBA futures. So does my guy, Brandon Kravitz. We had to squeeze in some early NBA win totals. So our producer, Michael Cohen, has given us some either or options. Two teams with similar win totals. Some of these are the exact same number. We have to choose which one we like more, which one is more likely to cash. So Brandon, we'll start with a couple teams in the Eastern Conference. Both of these sitting at 50.5. The Detroit Pistons versus the Philadelphia 76ers, both even money. Who's more likely to go over 50.5 wins?
I'm going to go with the Philadelphia 76ers. And I agree. Special thanks to Michael for putting these together, because I've been so entrenched in NFL prep, in betting Major League Baseball day after day, that it's time to check back in with the first love. And that is the National Basketball Association. So thank you for reigniting some thought across the league. But Philadelphia for me is the answer. The roster is ridiculously loaded. I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know, but this is a team that will go on some serious winning streaks throughout the course of the season. They were winning games last year with Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe just running teams ragged. Now they add Jaylen Brown and LeBron James. One thing that we rarely have to worry about with LeBron teams is chemistry, because he just finds a way to make it work quickly. I think on the opposite end, Detroit is dealing with something where They were like the pillar of health last year. Cade did miss some time, but that was about it. Their depth and effort is what led them to 60 wins. That is really hard to repeat year two after you're a healthy try-hard team. So for me, it's Philadelphia. I'll take the low-hanging fruit here.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Now, I'm surprised this Pistons number is coming in as low as it is because they did win 60 a year ago, but I think it's a reflection of the market recognizing that they probably overachieved, and they certainly didn't get any better this offseason. You know, this Jalen Duren situation still needs to play out. It feels like I think Detroit, you know, had about as smooth of a regular season as it could have outside of the Cade Cunningham collapse lung. And then we kind of realized in the playoffs, like, oh boy, what happened to this team is what a lot of people thought might happen. And I think there might be some carryover, right? I think it's tough to go out like they did and then run it back and, you know, dominate the regular season as they did last season. They are not a good three-point shooting team. They have an efficiency issue. They have a volume issue. I don't think they solve that this offseason. And, you know, Philadelphia, to me, they're a title or bust team, right? I don't think they're pushing to win 60 games necessarily in the regular season, but the amount of talent on this team, Brandon, like you said, is just overwhelming. And one of the advantages of bringing in LeBron James is he could play every position. He could be your backup center. He could be your starting point guard if you want. He can obviously play the three or the four. He plugs a lot of holes, I think, in this rotation. And this is a Sixers team that won 45 games a year ago with Joel Embiid playing 38, Paul George playing 37. Dominic Barlow and Kelly Oubre were two of the 5 minutes leaders overall for the 76ers in 2025-26. It's got to be Philly for me at 50.5. Let's head over to the Western Conference, Brandon, where we have the Denver Nuggets at 49.5. We have the Minnesota Timberwolves at 48.5. Which of these more likely to cash to the over, both at -110?
Let's go with the mile high club that is the Denver Nuggets. They are as steady and consistent as they come. And I don't think it should be overlooked that Aaron Gordon only played 36 games last season. He's a huge part of what they do, the identity that they have, especially on defense. And I'm just not sure how Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball are going to mesh. That team has offense for days. I think they're really going to struggle to put teams away late. They're going to be in some really high scoring games. Make sure that you set your league pass to Timberwolves games because they are going to be very entertaining. But I will shoot my shot with the more consistent and predictable Nikola Jokic, who is still in his prime.
This is very easily the Denver Nuggets for me. They cleared this number by 5 games last year with Jokic missing 17 games. That's the equivalent of him missing like 40, given his track record. That almost never happens. Christian Brown missed half the season. Cam Johnson missed 28 games. Aaron Gordon missed 46 games. Now, Jamal Murray did stay healthier than he normally does. Maybe that comes back around, but it did not feel like the Denver Nuggets had a positive regular season, and they still found their way into winning games in the mid-50s. I think that's just the baseline when you have Nikola Jokic on your team. So this one, very easily the Denver Nuggets for me. We'll hit a few more NBA win totals in just a moment, but folks, fantasy football should be about more than just setting a lineup and checking a score. Fantasy Boss is the new season-long fantasy sports platform built to keep the whole league involved. Commissioners get deep tools to run redraft, keeper, dynasty, best ball, guillotine, and more across any sport. Players get a modern experience that makes every matchup feel bigger. You get weekly recap videos, turning the week into a story everybody can relive and argue about. Taunt videos give the trash talk a face. And Beat the Boss keeps the whole league competing all season long. Everything lives in one place from draft night through the championship. No patchwork of extra apps, no ads, just a modern season-long fantasy platform with engagement built in. Create a new league or bring over the one you already run. You can start your league free at fantasyboss.com/rotowire. Fantasy Boss, your league never felt so alive. Playing a game of what's more likely to cash here on Prop Points, looking at some NBA win totals. Brandon, we're going cross-conference here, and I will give you the Houston Rockets over 47.5 wins, the Miami Heat over 46.5, both of these even money. What's more likely to cash?
This is diabolical work from one Michael Cohen, our producer. I'm not in love with either of these. I would take the under on both, but if I had to pick one, I'll take the Miami Heat. I just think they have more energy and vitality. The Rockets actually feel like they overachieved last year, winning 52 games, where I did not find them all that impressive. They were one team who rarely went up or down in my power ratings throughout the season. They just remained steadily below the baseline of a championship caliber team. They are still way too Kevin Durant reliant in terms of their scoring. He's going to be 38 by the time the season starts, and they might have some real chemistry issues in Houston as well. At least the Heat will enter the season on a mission and with some juice. So I'll go with Miami.
I don't like either of these one bit. It's probably Houston for me, and that is with Kevin Wayne Durant turning 38 in a couple of weeks. Yeah, they did play last year basically without a point guard. We'll see if Reed Shepard can find his way into the good graces of Ime Udoka this time around. But I think the return of Fred VanVleet is enough. And honestly, Brandon, for the first time in a while, I don't know if I'm scared of the Western Conference in the way that I have been in years past, where you think about just, man, no free wins on the schedule. I think the bottom has fallen out a little bit in the West. So I'll go Houston on that 47.5. Let's go back to the Eastern Conference. And we have two very different win totals here, but a fun one nonetheless. The New York Knicks over 53.5 wins, or the Cleveland Cavaliers over 47.5. Both of these plus 110. What's more likely to cash?
It has to be Cleveland. Just taking numbers in the East above 50 seems like a dangerous world to be living in. That's the world you'd be living in if you chose the New York Knicks here. I know the Cavs disappointed us all once again, but this is still an elite roster with guys who I don't question in the regular season. We are waiting for that boom for Evan Mobley, and if we get it, I think the Cavs could contend for number one seed status this season. Remember, this is not a playoff discussion. This is very much a regular season discussion. This isn't a knock against the Knicks, but they didn't win 54 last year, and now they have a championship hangover to worry about as well. They're going to have their sights set on the postseason. I'll go Cleveland.
Cavs over, I think, is the first win total I gave out on the show a few weeks ago. You said it, Brandon. This is a great regular season team. We're not saying the Cavs are going to win the East. We're not saying the Cavs are going to win the finals. But the way this team is constructed with Mitchell, with Harden, with Mobley, with Allen, they're going to win a ton of regular season games. Those guys stay healthy. They play a ton of games. Donovan Mitchell, by the way, between Utah and Cleveland, last 6 years has gone over this number, whatever roster he has been on. We got a little bit of time here, Brandon, for one more, and I would be remiss if we did not touch on your Orlando Magic. Orlando over 43.5 wins, or the Indiana Pacers over 44.5 in the Eastern Conference, which is more likely to cash?
I mean, come on, Nick, you already know the answer to this. The answer is the Magic. They won 45 games last year and had some of the worst injury luck imaginable. Franz missed time. Jalen Suggs missed time. Paolo Banchero missed time. They barely played together, and Paolo had a regression season. I think he was much more up and down than what I think he can produce. If he can really dial into playoff Paolo, who has been one of the better playoff performers in the NBA in the three seasons he's made it there, if he can do that in the regular season, this team is going to exceed expectation. Everyone's sleeping on them because they're not gobbling up the headlines, Nick, but I do think the Magic can go over.
I got the Magic as well, Brandon. And it's more about me just not having full faith in this Indiana Pacers team, a team that I thought dramatically overachieved 2 years ago. You got Tyrese Haliburton coming back from what has not been a smooth recovery, by the way, from the most devastating injury you could suffer as a basketball player. I will side with Brandon Kravitz. Give me that over 43.5 for the Orlando Magic. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is out. Ben Stevens is going to join us when we come back with some plays from that guide. If you're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolling along here on the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you on this Tuesday afternoon. We're heading out to the Progressive guest line. Bring in our guy, Ben Stevens. You could follow him at Ben Scott Stevens. You could, of course, find him on this very network, co-host of Live Bet Saturday here on VSiN. 2026 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is officially out. Make sure you go get your copy over at VSiN.com/betting guides. Ben, I know you had some plays published in that guide, so I want to give you a chance to talk about those. You got some win totals. You also have a team to win the Mountain West. Now, this is one of the best things about the betting guide. We're not just focusing on Power Five. We're not just hitting the Heisman and things like that. We're going deep on each and every team, each and every conference. What do you like about New Mexico to win the Mountain West at plus 265 this year?
Nick, Brandon, great to be with you. And Nick Whalen, as a proud Wisconsinite and a proud Wisconsin Badger, it's not what I like most about the Lobos. It's what you might like most about the Lobos and a potential future Wisconsin head coach in Jason Eck, who last year, in his first year with New Mexico, did historic things for this program, bringing a life and an enthusiasm to Lobo football that we had not seen maybe ever, but in a very long time. 9 wins under Eck in 2025, the most ever for a first-year head coach at UNM. And also home field advantage in Albuquerque being a critical piece. They were perfect, undefeated at home. And in the new look Mountain West this year, because of course the stalwart of the Mountain West, Boise State, now plays in the rebirth Pac-12 conference, it is a very different shakeup for what the Mountain West conference looks like. UNLV is still there, I believe, in what Dan Mullen is building in Sin City. They're an ever so slight favorite, a nickel in front of New Mexico. But what New Mexico brings back from a historic program last season is why I am buying in on the Lobos once again. My belief in Jason Eck is one of the best coaches, regardless of conference, league, or level in college football, and the fact he has 14 returning starters coming back to Albuquerque in 2025. That's almost unheard of at the Group of Six level, especially in the current climate of college football. It is the fourth most among all FBS programs, those 14 returning starters. And when you talk about not just returning starters, but guys who are incredibly productive and the congruency in the quarterback spot with Jack Lane, I am fully bought in to New Mexico. So that plus 265 price for a Lobos team that I think will be playing in the Mountain West title game to win said Mountain West championship. That's my look for the Mountain West Conference entering this new upcoming college football season.
Which is exactly why you guys need to go out there and download the betting guide so that you know what you're talking about when it comes to the Mountain West. Let's stay out west. Nico Iamaleava, maybe one of the most overlooked quarterbacks in college football right now. How much of that is baked into your analysis on UCLA? You have them over 6.5 wins at plus 110.
Yeah, Brandon, it's a huge component of it. And not just for the talent that Nico Iamaleava is, but for Nico Iamaleava staying in Westwood under a first-year head coach in Bob Chesney, what it says about his ability not just to bring newcomers from James Madison and elsewhere in the sport of college football, but to retain some of the best talent from a Bruins team that frankly was disappointing and had a very chaotic 2025 despite that magical run of 3 consecutive wins in late September, early October. But we saw some of the brilliance of Nico Iamaleava in those upsets under Jerry Neuheisel as the offensive coordinator, but the athleticism with the cannon arm. And when you look around the country and you try to spot that next Kurt Cignetti, who can have the next revolution like we have seen in Bloomington, I believe that Cignetti is the anomaly and not the standard. But if you were building an archetype of a head coach to rival that level of success, winning at the lower levels, proving your winning ways carry regardless of what division or conference you are in college football, to me, it's Bob Chesney. 16 years as a head coach collegiately. He has a win percentage overall of 71.7%. 16 years as a college football head coach, 8 conference championships. Half of the years that he has been a college football head coach, he has gone home with a conference crown, including last year in the Sun Belt, of course, leading James Madison to a college football playoff appearance. So Nico Iamaleava is back in Westwood. One of the things that Cignetti has done and maintained in Bloomington is bringing the guys that proved it with him on his coaching staff, and they are still there. The OC, Mike Shanahan, the defensive coordinator, Brian Haynes. Same story for Chesney. He brings both Dean Kennedy, the OC from JMU, and his defensive coordinator last year in Colin Hitchler with him to Westwood. I think Nico's style of play, utilizing the athleticism, but also being a true passer of the football, is going to be highlighted by Dean Kennedy's system. We saw that same story play out for Alonzo Barnett and the Dukes a season ago. They also bring the All-American, All-Purpose player in Wayne Knight from JMU to UCLA. Sun Belt Freshman of the Year in Zaire West on the defensive side of the football. UCLA's schedule by Big Ten standards, very manageable. I know UCLA only won 3 games a season ago. I know it's a first-year head coach, but I am a believer in Bob Chesney. I think UCLA not only doubles its win total to see a bowl game in 2026, but adds one on as well to go over 6.5 wins.
We'll have some more plays from our guy Ben Stevens in just a moment. But folks, as you may have heard, the VSiN College Football Betting Guide is officially here. You can go download it. It's live over at VSiN.com. Sign up for VSiN Pro today. You'll get instant access to our College Football Betting Guide previews of all 138 FBS teams. You get our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from all your favorite VSiN experts. Plus, you get our brand new NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video over on the VSiN Watch app. You can start today for just $9.99 or get a full year, save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Talking some college football with Ben Stevens, co-host of Live Bet Saturday here on VSiN. He joins us via the Progressive guest line. So, Ben, you just gave us UCLA over 6.5 wins. Another team that struggled last season out of the SEC, the Kentucky Wildcats. They did get to 5 wins. Now, one of those came over Tennessee Tech. 2 of those came against MAC opponents in the non-con. You're looking at this Kentucky team to go over 4.5 on what should be a pretty manageable number. What's the breakdown on why the Wildcats are getting to 5 wins again?
And all those soft non-con games, even against FCS foes, do count to go over a win total. 4.5 for Will Stein in his first year in Lexington. The former offensive coordinator in Eugene at Oregon under Dan Lanning. Now coaching this Kentucky team. And it's a very similar story to what we have seen take place in the current climate of college football. When you have more of a predominantly basketball school, but the boosters and the NIL collective are starting to open up the pocketbooks and invest into this football program. I believe in Will Stein. He has that supreme belief in himself, as he mentioned at SEC Media Days just a few weeks back. When asked why he thinks he's going to have success with the Cats, he said, because of me. Honestly, and I believe in the offensive genius that is Will Stein and what they have brought in the transfer portal for the investment into this football program entering 2026. The backup at Notre Dame last year in Kenny Minchie at the quarterback spot that I think has a lot of talent to flourish and thrive in a Will Stein system. We have seen it. We have seen him do it with Bo Nix, with Dylan Gabriel, last year with Dante Moore. I think that continues over even now with Big Blue Nation. They also brought in some pieces around Kenny Minchie in terms of the backfield. C.J. Baxter, the transfer from Texas. Javonte Barnes, the transfer from Oklahoma. Nick Anderson, who played last year at LSU. Big-bodied wide receiver on the outside, and they brought in some reinforcements up front to protect Kenny Minchie and give him time to distribute the football. It is not an easy schedule for the Wildcats this year. Very few are within the SEC, but there are some home games, Nick, on the docket against Alabama, against LSU, against Florida, against the in-state foes in Louisville to end out the year, albeit in a non-conference game, where I think that Kentucky can play spoiler and maybe surprise some by pulling off an upset, where I know the Wildcats will have to do just that to go over 4.5 wins. I think they can get to 5, maybe even 6, and what Will Stein is building with this Kentucky football program will continue not just this upcoming season, but for years to come in Lexington.
Ben, we've got about 45 seconds left. Last year has to throw a wrench into the confidence when it comes to picking a national championship game. Does Indiana-Miami make you want to run away from the top of the board, or are we sticking with the heavy hitters?
I would still stick with some of those heavy hitters. You can probably find some prices down the board that present some value, but it's easy for me to paint a path at times based on what schedules look like, how many wins are still going to be necessary. You got to get a double digits to feel safe about anybody to reach the college football playoff or to play in that national championship game. I do think Indiana at that 8-1 price has a little bit of value. I think they're being slightly overlooked just based on the track record that Kurt Cignetti has built in Bloomington, even with a completely reshaped roster. That's been the story each of now his 3 years in Bloomington. When you look at some other prices across the board, I know Oregon is going to be one that is incredibly intriguing, Brandon, and a name that has been featured often in the college football betting guide for VSiN. That plus 750 price is 50 cents shorter than it was even about 48 hours ago. If the trend continues in the Big Ten, 3 consecutive national championships with 3 different programs, many looking at Oregon to do the same in 2026.
Go and download that 2026 college football betting guide over at VSiN.com. Ben Stevens, host of Live Bet Saturday. Thanks so much, Ben. We appreciate the time. Coming up next,
thanks for having me,
guys. Heisman Trophy Awards. We're going to preview that coming up right here on Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network. We'll be right back.
cashing prop points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you, bringing you up to the top of the hour. Money Moves with JVT coming your way next. There'll be plenty more college football talk on that program. Tim Murray's going to stop by with some plays from the guide, as will the great Wes Reynolds. So keep it locked all afternoon here on VSiN. Brandon, you were kind enough to prepare a full card, a full menu, if you will, of Heisman Trophy options for us. So very much looking forward to getting into some of your plays. And before we get into some of those specific bets, I want to know what your process looks like, because I think in a lot of ways you can look at the Heisman similarly to the NFL MVP award. But of course, you have a much wider group of players that you're choosing from. And you know, much like the NFL MVP, it does tend to be a quarterback award, but that's not gospel like it is in the NFL. We've seen Derrick Henry, Devontae Smith, you know, Travis Hunter just a couple of years ago take home this award. So, you know, as you start to play the process of elimination game, what kind of criteria are you looking for? What qualifies or disqualifies a player from making your card?
So some exciting news in my life over the last year is I have been fortunate enough to be given a Heisman vote. Last year was the first year that I have had a ballot to fill out. So I guess you and I have not talked about that yet, but it's super cool. There's a number of people in the state of Florida. I don't know if somebody retired or died, but I wound up getting a vote somehow. And Fernando Mendoza, which, by the way, was at the top of my ballot. So I don't know if that means that I won. I don't know if it works like that. But so what I did last year, Nick, is I took this award much more seriously than I ever have before, because I wanted to come up with my own criteria for who I'm going to be looking at. And, you know, while this isn't an award that I heavily bet because of integrity issues, it is one that I can at least discuss in terms of what you should be looking for. Number one for me is production against top competition. So you have to have a schedule that allows you to be featured in a way where the media is going to be enthralled by your production. Consistency week to week is really important as well. That's not really something we can judge till we get into the season. Signature moments in high stakes games, those things have won Heismans over the years. We use the terminology Heisman moments, overall value of your team's ability to win games, because we don't see, outside of perhaps Travis Hunter, we don't see Heisman Trophy winners that come from teams that don't have a lot of success. So that's the place where I would say to start is look for players that can check those boxes. Now, that doesn't necessarily help you whittle things down, because that's a lot of names. The last two Heismans have been 50-1 or longer in the preseason. The last odds on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy award was Marcus Mariota in 2014. So the fact is that if you want to bet a guy to win the Heisman, don't take the favorite. And that would exclude the likes of CJ Carr and Arch Manning. So I would be on to the next with that. Since 2006, 16 of the 20 Heismans have been quarterbacks. So I would say goodbye to the likes of Jeremiah Smith. And we've also seen the last four Heisman Trophy winners have all been transfer portal babies. They've all transferred from one school to another. So if you wanted to follow that very small sample and look for a quarterback that is in a new place, then perhaps that's a way that you can look as well. So if we're just looking at, I think you have to try and narrow the list as much as you can.
I just need a moment. You brought up that Mariota Heisman, which was stolen from Melvin Gordon. Very clearly should have won it that year. Not that it gets Mariota. Had a great season. Couldn't quite cap it off with the national championship, but a ridiculous, ridiculous year nonetheless for Melvin Gordon. Anyway, Brandon, let's get to some of these plays. So you've given us the criteria, the guys that we can maybe think about crossing off. And obviously we're looking to generate value here. So all your plays are at least in double digits, if not into the 40-50-1 range. But we'll start with the shorter odds players. You're looking at Darian Mensah from Miami, and you're looking at Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss, 12-13-1 respectively.
So I had mentioned that we're going to look quarterback. We're going to look transfer portal. That's part of what got me to Darian Mensah. The last five seasons have also seen a very healthy rotation of conferences that have been winners as well. Pac-12, SEC, Big 12, and Big 10 all getting into the mix. So that leaves just one as the next conference up, the ACC. And I think Darian Mensah's got as good a shot as anybody else. He led the Blue Devils last year to their first ACC championship since 1989. Mensah led the ACC in passing yards and in touchdowns thrown. Despite being sacked 28 times, that's not going to happen at Miami. He's got a weaponry upgrade, an offensive line upgrade. They don't have enough marquee games, which is one of the things that I look for, but they're at Notre Dame late in the season. His performance in that game could really help to decide things. And then for Trinidad's Chambliss, I mean, this is like his eighth year of college football. So that helps in terms of experience. He's a dual threat, high powered offense. He's got some big games on his schedule. If he balls out against LSU in week three, I think he's going to zoom to the top of the list. He's arguably the best RPO quarterback in college football. And I just think his ability to win when the play breaks down makes him a really exciting option in terms of Heisman.
So you mentioned, Brandon, we're coming off of back-to-back years where we've had the Heisman winner come at 50-1 or longer. So I know you have some long shots for us, including Byron Brown at Auburn. You're looking at Rocco Becht at Penn State. How much do you factor in your outlook for these teams, specifically for quarterbacks, right? Where you're looking at a Penn State or an Auburn team, they're sitting somewhere between 60 and 80-1 to win the national championship.
I'm not so much worried about the national championship because voting is coming in well before that, but can you at least be competitive in your conference? And if the answer is no, then I tend to stay away. But look, these teams are, there's a lot of roster turnover. So the fact is as much as we think we know, we don't. I mean, we thought Penn State and Clemson were going to be good last year and both were a pile of trash. So I wouldn't overrate your priors when it comes to this stuff. Bet on talent first. And opportunities to show what you're made of on a really big stage. It's one of the reasons I really liked to just target guys that are in the SEC and the Big Ten because there's so many big games in those conferences. I love Lenora Sellers. I'm just worried that the Gamecocks aren't going to be quite good enough. But 40-1 on a guy that has as much talent and upside as anybody in college football. Kendall Briles now calling plays for South Carolina. He brings in an air raid offense. The O-line has to be better. They ranked 78th nationally last year. He's not going to succeed if they don't get better than that. Byron Brown at Auburn is a guy that he played college football 2 hours down the road from where I'm sitting right now last year at USF. This guy is an absolute bull who can throw the ball deep pretty well. I mean, he's a physical runner. He's got a pretty deep ball. And Auburn plays Tennessee, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Alabama. So he's going to have plenty of opportunities to shine on the big stage. I think this guy could really take college football by storm. And then Rocco Becht is the most experienced starting quarterback in all of college football. Penn State looking for a massive bounce back this year. He was super productive at Iowa State. Matt Campbell, his head coach, comes over. So there's familiarity with coaching, with scheme, and all of that. And some of the pass catchers coming over from Ames as well. I just don't think he's priced properly in the market. So Rocco Becht is definitely somebody I have circled.
Do you have any interest in Dante Moore? 10-1. Is that a juicy enough price for you?
The issue with Dante Moore is the same issue I have with betting on Julian Sain. I would put them in the same sort of category. Their teams are just so loaded that I'm not sure they're going to get enough credit. You know, we look back last year, Indiana, by the time we got through the college football playoff, we all appreciated their run game and their defense, but that wasn't the case throughout the course of the regular season. It was Fernando Mendoza. And that's one of the things I want to look for as well when I'm trying to predict who could be in that conversation at the end of the year for Heisman. It's hard to predict these wild statistical outputs, but you can sort of get an idea of who's going to get the credit if things go well. I don't think Dante Moore and Julian Sain will get enough of the credit on teams that are just stocked full of talent. It's the issue I have with Gunnar Stockton as well at Georgia. Are you going to get enough of the credit if your team succeeds?
You can find plenty more Heisman analysis in the 2026 VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Once again, it is available over at VSiN.com/betting guides. Brandon, let's finish out the show before we hand things over to Money Moves with our best bets of the night. You have a Boston Red Sox future for us.
Yeah, I've taken the last couple of days off of Major League Baseball day-to-day betting. I'm just letting things settle post-trade deadline, and then I'll update my numbers and we'll go from there. But for right now, I'm going to take my units and I am going to bet futures. I like the Red Sox to win the American League. Love the addition they made at the deadline. I think their pitching is good enough, and they are as hot as you could ask for headed down the stretch.
I'm just going to that Denver Nuggets over 49.5 win total that we talked about earlier in the show. We laid it out, man. Everything went wrong for the Nuggets last year. They still go over that number by five games. I think a number below 50, a little disrespectful for a Nikola Jokic team. That's going to wrap the Tuesday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, but keep it locked. Money Moves with Jonathan Von Tobel coming your way next. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.